Okay. Sasan? All right. Sounds like they have some really high production value next door. I apologize. I don't have any fancy movies or anything to show you, but I do have lots of demos. So thank you for taking the time. The next hour, we're going to spend drilling into a little bit more of what I showed in the keynote a few minutes ago. And I know that I'm the only thing that stands between you and lunch, so I want to make good, efficient use of your time, and hopefully we can get through everything and leave a little bit of room at the end for questions. I do want to apologize in advance. I have another session I have to go to right after this one, so I will be leaving at 10 minutes after the hour, but there's lots of other opportunities to talk to myself and my colleagues this week. We have a booth over in the expo hall, and we have lots of other great breakout sessions happening. I'll point you to some of the ones that you won't want to miss at the end of my presentation here. So my name is Brian Keller, and I have the best job at Microsoft. I get to show off what our team is building around application lifecycle management tooling. A lot of you have probably already started to use Visual Studio 2012. Just I'm curious, quick show of hands, how many people are using VS 2012? That's outstanding. How many people are on Team Foundation Server 2012? Excellent. Anybody on Team Foundation Service, the cloud-hosted version? All right, a few of you as well. So that's always great to see. So for those of you that are already on 2012, you're probably already aware of our new update cadence that we have around Visual Studio. I talked about this a little bit in the keynote. And if you look at when we actually released Visual Studio 2012 back in September, since then we've already delivered two updates, which contain bug fixes and performance updates, and we're already very close to shipping update three as well. So that's our way of continuously giving you new value in the product. And for those of you that really like to be on the bleeding edge, at Team Foundation Service, we actually push to production every 3 weeks. Usually, every 3 weeks, there's new features. Sometimes it's behind the scenes things to help us manage the service, but it's the best way for you to kind of adopt these features or at least look at them with a rapid cadence. So you can always set up a Team Foundation Service account to see what's going on there. Of course, in just a few hours on the West Coast, tomorrow, they're going to be kicking off the Build Conference, and you're going to see a lot more out of the Build Conference around how Visual Studio is evolving to help you build great applications for Windows 8.1 and to support all of the other platforms with respect to Azure tooling and tooling for SharePoint and that type of experience. So I know you can't be in two places at once, but all of the content from the Build Conference will be made available. So you can go watch that as soon as I think Friday is when the sessions will start to show up. So you can download that and check it out. But of course, today I'm going to be focused primarily on our application lifecycle management capabilities. And so one of the trends that we've seen is this push to have this continuous update cadence where you're being able to respond more rapidly to your customers' feedback. And that's great, but along with that, there's a lot of challenges. How do you respond to the feedback and prioritize it so that you don't burn out your software development team? How do you ensure that quality is always baked into that process, especially when what you're doing is shipping to production maybe every 6 weeks or even faster? You don't always have time to just park the team for a month and just do bug fixes. Another thing that we're trying to do is make sure that there's a smooth collaboration between the development team and the operations team so that when the development team finishes up a release, the operations team understands what's in that release and they have the confidence that that's a well-tested release that they can push out to production. So those are just a few of the trends that we're seeing with respect to application lifecycle management. And so I'm going to take you through a series of demos across each one of those stages. That's plan, develop, release, and operate. So the first thing that I'm going to show you is the work that we've done in 2013 to really help you take our planning tools and expand those across your entire organization. For those of you that are using either Team Foundation Service or TFS 2012, you're probably already familiar with the agile planning capabilities that we introduced, and those tools are great for managing a team of, 6 to 10 people. But what I keep getting asked by is, how do we take the agile practices that work really well on a small team, and how do we scale those up to an entire organization? Now, that also has some people scared when you start to say that, though, because usually when you scale a practice like Agile across an entire organization, it tends to mean that you're usually less Agile after that, because now you have to do things like all of the rest of the people in the organization. And so we've tried to give you the best of both worlds, and I'm going to show you that here with a demonstration of how we can take Agile, scale that up to the team, but still allow each one of those teams to kind of continue to practice Scrum or whatever process methodology works great for them. And so here you can see the experience that we shipped in TFS 2012. We've made a few fit and finish updates. We've added a splash of color in here. But for the most part, I can, you know, say I'm going to build some new capability. I can add that to my backlog. That automatically goes right into my backlog as a work item within TFS. I can start to turn on things like forecast lines, which start to predict which iterations I'll be able to deliver these features in. And then I can start to assign them to an iteration. So far, everything that I'm doing is on a single team. In fact, up here at the top, you'll notice that I'm currently using the Fabricam Fiber Devices team to do this work. So think of this as a team that maybe builds the device experiences that might be specific to an iPad app or a Windows Phone app and what have you. When I move into that iteration, I can start to take some of that work and I can start to break it down. Actually meant to click here, and I can assign these individuals tasks to the developers on my team. Maybe we'll use another task here. Julia, don't forget the name of the people on your team. They work for you. And so at this point, you can see that we've added that work, we've broken it down, but now Julia has too much work on her plate. So that's easy enough. We can actually just come down here and move some of this work to a future iteration or maybe adjust it to other people until everybody's happy. And so this is an experience that we ourselves actually use at Microsoft all the time. When we do our stand-up meetings every day, we'll revisit that particular iteration's backlog and take into account maybe a team member was out sick or maybe a particular requirement looks to be bigger than we first expected, and we're constantly adjusting the schedule in that way. Once we then leave our stand-up meeting and go back to our desk, people usually open up in the background a task board interface like this one so that they can see the way that other people on the team are actually checking in progress against that plan. Or if you have a nice big touchscreen monitor in your team room, you can set that up, and it's touch-enabled so that I can actually walk by on my lunch break and drag and drop some work over, and that will update again in real time against TFS. So this is a great experience for the small team. How do we make that scale up to a larger team? Well, here you can see that I have the team homepage for my core Fabricam Fiber team. So maybe this is a team of senior developers who manage the portfolio across all the individual sprint teams. When I switch into their backlog view, you'll notice that they have this view called features. Now, these are the hierarchies that we ship out of the box. We have features and backlog items for the Scrum process template. If you're using the Agile process template, you'll see features and user stories. The idea here is that you can take this and adapt it for whatever works for you. Within Microsoft, we tend to use kind of a three-tier hierarchy system where we have pillars that go down into scenarios, that go down into features, and there's going to be another presentation by my colleague Greg Bohr where he'll get into the mechanics of how you actually add and customize this hierarchy. But for now, think of a feature as being a larger unit of work that multiple teams across your organization might come together to build in tandem. And so at this point, I'm looking at my features, but I can pivot this view to see all of the backlog items. And if you look over here on the right, we have this area path column, and that actually defines what each one of the individual teams are that is assigned to that particular backlog item. So here I'm looking at the relationship between features and backlog items. And if I want to, I can drill down one level deeper and show tasks as well. So we feel like this is a really good experience for helping you conduct agile portfolio management. We would love to get your feedback on this. But I did mention that we want to be able to strike a balance so that you don't have to force the entire team to practice the same set of processes the identical way. And so if I take a look at my devices team again, one of the things that we shipped in TFS 2012 was this Kanban board. Now, Kanban is a really great process for being able to look at the flow of value that you have coming in across your project. And so this actually comes out of Japanese auto manufacturing, and they took a look at maybe an auto manufacturing assembly line where you might be building tires and then you build engines and then eventually you assemble those into a big car. Well, it doesn't do you any good to just have everybody in the factory build tires for a month. You'll just have a stack of tires at the end of the day. But instead, if you make sure that you have the right number of people building tires, the right number of people building engines, and so on, then you'll have a steady flow of cars coming out the other side. And Kanban can be applied to software development in a very similar way. You want to make sure that you have your business analysts continuing to flesh out requirements so that you can hand those off in a smooth manner to development teams, so who can then hand them off to testing and operations and so forth. But if I look at my devices team here, the devices team may say, you know what, for our team, we have a specific phase that we want to model within Kanban that represents when we've actually managed to test the experience on a physical device. And so what I can do is customize this. I can add a new phase over here. Maybe we'll call it, you know, device tested. And when I do that, that updates their Kanban board. So I can now take work and I can flow it from left to right and move it into the device tested field. But the nice thing about that is that that's specific to that particular team. So now when I switch over to my other teams, they're not going to necessarily have the same set of fields. You can see here I'm looking at the backlog, and they maintain their own Kanban board. So there's another important thing here, which is that for any of you that are TFS administrators, notice that I didn't have to drop in to edit the process template as part of that experience. So you'll see us as kind of a trend moving forward, starting to give the individual teams more power in terms of being able to customize their experience while allowing other teams to have their own unique experience and not requiring the TFS administrator to have to lift a finger to enable most of those scenarios. Another thing that we added in TFS 2012 Update 1 was the ability for you to start representing metadata on work items, and we call these work item tags. And so I can come in here and start to add additional tags. Maybe I want to represent, you know, Android work. And when I do that, then that tag gets added. Whoops, pay no attention to that error message. That these are pre-preview bits. Let's see, we'll just refresh that guy. It wouldn't be a demo if something didn't go wrong. So there you can see that tag got added. And again, I can add this additional metadata information, and I can filter on that for this individual team without necessarily needing to go back to the team administrator to change anything there. Another thing that I started to show in the keynote this morning was this idea of team rooms. And so if I go to my homepage here for Fabricam Fiber and scroll down, you can create as many team rooms as you want to. And there's two goals for the team room. Number one, it provides you with this real-time collaboration experience. So I can chat with other people on my team. In fact, I'll just have my colleague send me a message here. This should show up in real time over on my screen. And then I can also start to get information, interesting events from the Team Foundation server events that are happening in the background. So if I take a look, for example, at the options here, I can turn on build completion events. If a build fails, my team can get a message about that. I can turn on indications that someone's checked in some new code or a work item has been changed. I can also write my own custom events as well. So we'll be releasing some documentation along with the preview that allows you to actually write events that map straight back to a REST API. And so if there's another event that happens or maybe a custom build process that you run, you can have those events start to show up right in the team room. So it makes it really nice for you to kind of see everything in one dashboard experience. I can also go back in time. So I showed this in the keynote where maybe I was out of the office yesterday. Now I can go back in time and I can catch up and I can see what my team was working on yesterday. So it gives you both that real-time view and that persistent view as well. So that's Team Room. If I click over to one of these change sets, now you can see the message showed up. So I actually got a toast here saying that that was directed at me. But if I click back over to maybe a change here, I can open up this change set directly in Web Access. And now I have the opportunity, if I want to come in and look at what changed as part of that particular change. And I can also leave comments in here as well. So for example, what happened to the unit test? Why did we remove that from this particular project? And now this is just another collaborative platform that my team can come into, and we can have kind of a lightweight dialogue about particular files and changes and really be able to track that even if we're not having the luxury of being co-located in the same experience. So that's lightweight code comments, and that works whether you're using a Team Foundation version control repository or a Git-based repository that I'll talk about in a few minutes here. So I showed you a few experiences around agile project management, Kanban customization, really the ability for you to both scale agile portfolio management out to your team and also allow teams to have their own flexibility. I mentioned that there's going to be another session that goes a lot deeper into that. I'll give you the session details later, but that's from my colleague Greg Bohr. I believe that session is later today. Let's switch over into kind of the core, 9-to-5 experience that most software developers will have, and let's take a look at how Visual Studio itself is evolving to help you work in a more collaborative fashion with the other people on your team. If I switch back over to the right machine here and open up Visual Studio, I want to show you the experience starting from Visual Studio and connecting to TFS for the first time, because there's some nice little things that the team has done to make that a much easier experience. When I connect to this team project, the first thing it's going to tell me is that I need to configure my workspace mappings. This is something that in the past you would have had to go out and remember to do manually. But now I can just click on Configure, and it's going to ask me which directory to map this to. And it's automatically going to go fetch all of the source code for this particular team project. The other nice thing it's going to do down here at the bottom is it's actually going to enumerate all of the solution files that are within that particular team project. So you'll see here in a minute that it will show up and give me the easy ability to jump straight into a solution. So we'll open up that solution. And in the keynote, I showed you a capability called CodeLens. I described it as this kind of situational awareness, heads-up display for your code. I want to show you the experience that you'll need to go through in order to get the most out of CodeLens. I'll just open up a file here that demonstrates some changes. And what you should see here in the background, I know it's kind of hard to see in the room, but as it's starting to read this file, it's starting to parse across my entire solution, and it's starting to show me references that are taking place from other parts of the code into this particular code. Let me just zoom in there so you can see that. So there you can see the references, and you can see the other people that have changed my code. Now, in order for you to see other people that have changed this code, you will have to be using Team Foundation Server 2013. So if you don't see that, make sure you're connected to a project that's under source control with TFS 2013. When I click on references and mouse over that, it gives me a really nice inline indication telling me exactly what code is referencing that. I can click on the changes here, and I can double click to see that particular change set. And so here's the nice side-by-side comparison. Over on the right-hand side, you can see the comment for that. If there were any work items that were associated with that change set, I would have immediate context to understand exactly why that file changed. The other thing that you can light up with CodeLens is if you turn on Test Explorer and build your project, One of the things you might be familiar with from 2012 is that Test Explorer can look across your entire project for any types of unit tests that we understand how to build based on the test adapters you have installed. So we ship out of the box with a test adapter for .NET code and C++ code. You can also go download third-party test adapters for frameworks like InUnit and XUnit as well. So here I built my solution. We looked across the solution for any unit tests. And if I take these unit tests and run them, you'll start to see this showing up as code lens information as well. And so now you can see that this particular block of code is referenced by these two tests. So that set of tests is actually scoped to only the tests that exercise this block of code. And I can see that one of them is failing. So if I wanted to make a quick fix to this, I can then rerun just those tests directly within Code Lens. So my colleague David Starr is doing another presentation on CodeLens later on this week. There's a whole lot more stuff that we have planned around CodeLens. This is just the beginning, but we feel like there's a lot of rich, interesting data within your solution and within Team Foundation Server that we can start to light up to give you that kind of situational awareness to help you answer the questions of what is this code doing, who's working on it, and so on. So that's CodeLens. Another thing that we started to do with Visual Studio 2012 is we started to take in some of the power tools that we previously shipped as an add-on to Visual Studio 2012. So one of those is the ability for you to just hold down Alt on a block of code and move that up and down. Another one is I can turn on scroll bar indicators. So if I want a wide margin for my scroll bar, that shows me an inline preview of everything. I can turn on breakpoints down here, and those show up in my scroll bar. So it just makes it really easy for you to see what's going on. If we break that code, you'll notice, you know, we've got a compile break down there. So that's scroll bar indicators. It's built right in. And you can turn that on and off as you'd like. Another thing that that we've done for the first time ever with Visual Studio 2013 is we've actually connected your IDE experience back to your Microsoft account. So we're starting to personalize this for you and starting to light up additional information for you based on what we might know about you. So for example, if you have an Azure account, then you can link that to your Live ID or your Microsoft account. And then when you're in Visual Studio, we'll start to, in the future, automatically fill out those dialogues when you're starting to connect to push your code out to Windows Azure. So you'll notice up here in the upper right, I'm signed in as Brian Keller. I happen to be signed in as Brian Keller on my desktop machine back in Seattle. So as I've been making changes to the way that my development environment works, it's actually sending those changes remotely over to the cloud to change my machine somewhere in Redmond right now. And so you can turn that on and off, but by default, we'll automatically sync a lot of your settings. So things like font size or if you get your environment just the way you want it on one machine, you can easily roam that over to the other machines that you might work on. So we call that the connected IDE experience. There's a lot more stuff we have planned in the future. Finally, if you're like I am and you're starting to look at code for the first time and kind of remind yourself of something you may have written 6 months ago, then you probably use GoTo definition a lot. So you place your cursor somewhere and you press F12. Another thing that we've added is the ability for you to do what's called peak definition. So here I held down the Alt key and I pressed F12, and now it opened up that definition in line for me. Usually what you'd want to do is actually park that on another monitor somewhere so that it was out of the way. But it's just another way that we can easily help you explore that code so that you don't have to jump all over the place as you're going to definition. Now, anybody out there use Git? Maybe for some personal projects a few of you out there. So we've seen that Git has had this really popular uptake, especially in the open source world, and it's starting to kind of come in through the floorboards into enterprises as well. Git is a distributed version control system, and so what that means is rather than track everything centrally like you do with TFS traditionally, everybody can have their own copy of the repo. One of the nice things about that is I can be working on an airplane, and I'm totally offline, and so I can commit multiple times locally, and then when I get back to my desk and I want to synchronize with the repo that's being used by the rest of my my team, I can do that. So earlier this year, we announced that we were bringing Git as a first-class citizen, both to Visual Studio and to Team Foundation Service. And so starting in January, you could actually go to Team Foundation Service, and you could create a Git repository and start using that against TF Service. You could also download a set of tools for Visual Studio that allowed you to connect to Git repos as well, whether that's TFS or other Git repos like GitHub and Bitbucket and so on. Now, we're actually shipping the Git repository experience directly within Team Foundation Server 2013 on-premises as well. So I thought what I might do is actually just create a new Git project to show you what that experience looks like. I'll create a new team project. We'll call it my Git repo. And one of the ways that we've tried to design this experience is by giving you the flexibility of using Git, but without sacrificing all of the integrated ALM capabilities that TFS offers. So I can continue to pick a process template just like I would for any traditional Team Foundation Server project, and I can choose Git as the repo option. And when I click Finish, this is going to go create a Git repo directly within TFS on-premises. Now, I want to be clear here that this is just Git. This is not a special Microsoft implementation of Git. We're actually partnering with the open source community on this, and we're excited that the same Git that you see here is going to work with any of the other customized tools that you may have, which connect to other Git repositories. So once this is done, I'll create a project, and I'll show you what it looks like to start using Git as a Visual Studio developer. So when I connect to this team project, it's going to tell me that the first thing I need to do is clone this repo locally. So this is going to be the location on disk where I will start to track all of my changes. And now at this point, I can start creating a new project. So maybe we'll create a Windows Phone project. We'll just save it directly into that folder. Now when I did that, Visual Studio in the background is actually detecting all of those changes that are happening on disk. And so when I move over to the changes node, it's going to tell me that I have some files that are ready to check in. Now, the first time you do this, you will have to configure both your name and your email address, and this is just a way that we can track the changes back to you so that other people on your team know what you're working on. And now I'm looking at the pending changes dialog. Now, the number one feature request that people asked us for to bring back from Visual Studio 2010 is the ability for you to have a dockable pending changes window. And so I'm pleased to announce that we finally do have the dockable and floating pending changes window that you can bring back there. So now I can float this, I can put it on another monitor if I had one, and so on. We'll call this an initial check-in. We'll go ahead and commit. Now, at this point, it's important to note that I'm just committing locally. Now, I happen to have a TFS connection, but I have not pushed any of my changes to the server yet. So for all intents and purposes, I could be on an airplane right now. And so let's just make a quick change. We'll call this, my tech ed app. We'll save that change. Now we've picked up that additional change down here, so we'll just change the title. And we'll commit this, and I could just keep making those commitments and checking them in. But at some point, I'm going to come back into the office, and I'll want to actually synchronize my changes back with the master Git repo sitting in TFS. So at this point, I can click on Sync. It's going to take all of those changes and serially push them up to that TFS Git repository. And so now all of my changes exist on the server. And so now if I go back to look at the changes, for example, I can go to, let's show this in web access. Go to the source code tree. And here you can see all of my changes are checked in. If I look at the history, you'll notice that each one of those successive check-ins is now available on the server. And the experience that I just showed you would be identical if you wanted to use local Git repos only or connect to Bitbucket or any other experience like that. For those of you that are still on Visual Studio 2012 for a while, you can download Visual Studio 2012 Update 2 or soon Update 3, and then you can go to the Visual Studio Gallery and you can grab the Visual Studio Tools for Git that will allow you to do the same experience within the 2012 development experience. So now let me switch gears a little bit and I'll move over to show you a little bit more of the web and load testing experience that I showed in the keynote this morning. How many people have done web and load testing with Visual Studio in the past? Okay, great, fair number of you. So for those of you that haven't, I'll just start with a brand new project here and show you how easy it is to get started. I'll just need to create a test project here. And usually a load test is composed of multiple what we call web performance tests. Now a web performance test is really just a series of recorded HTTP or HTTPS interactions with a particular web application or a web service as well. If you're building a phone application or maybe a Windows Store application, you can go through a slightly different experience than what I'm going to show you by actually opening up Fiddler. I'm sure most of you have used Fiddler before. And Fiddler can capture the HTTP traffic for you, and you can convert that into a web performance test that you can use within Visual Studio. For this test, I'll just record a simple interaction with a website. We'll try to do a denial of service attack on Microsoft.com. I don't think we'll be successful, but we'll at least generate some load here. And we'll just make this a really simple test. So we'll record that. And what this is going to do is take all of my HTTP traffic and convert that into a web performance test that I can then customize over time if I'd like to. It's just running my test again to make sure that it was successful. And it was. And usually, you would record multiple web performance tests like this. Like if you are testing an e-commerce website, you might record one test that shows what happens when users create a new account, another test when users are shopping for toothbrushes, and another test that shows what happens when they're checking out. And you would compose that into a load test, and you would specify that at any given point in time, you expect maybe 5% of your users are creating a new account, 80% are shopping, and the rest are actually paying you. For this test, we'll keep it simple. And so we'll just use a single web performance test. We'll add a load test. We can define how we want our load to be generated. So in this case, I'll specify a maximum of 400 virtual users. And we'll start with 10. So every few seconds, we'll go up by 10 users until we get to 400. That's a nice way to actually measure at what point does my web application start to slow down. There's a lot more options you can configure, some of which I'm skipping in the interest of time. My colleague Anu will be doing another presentation later this week where she'll go much deeper. One of the things you can also specify is different browser types, and this actually changes the HTTP header of the request. And so that way, if you're trying to simulate how your page might scale when it has to render on a variety of devices, smartphones, different browsers, you can simulate that as part of the request. We'll keep the defaults for now. And then finally, we can specify how much time we want this to run. So we'll just run it for a minute. Now, at this point in the past, when you would have run this test using earlier versions of Visual Studio, it would have tried to generate the load directly from within Visual Studio. And if you exceeded 250 concurrent users, you would have had to go set up what's called a test rig, which means that you're installing agents on a bunch of different machines, you're having to maintain those machines, and the reality is that you're probably only using those machines a few times a month. And so we thought this was a great scenario to take to the cloud. And so now when you download Visual Studio 2013, which will be available tomorrow, you'll have this option of specifying Team Foundation Service as your test rig. And because Team Foundation Service is built on top of the Windows Azure platform, we can take advantage of the elastic scale that Azure gives us. So we're going to figure out how many agents we need dynamically, automatically for you. We're going to initialize that in the cloud. And then once this is ready, it's going to start running that test and reporting back on the results for you. There's all sorts of detailed information you can get, which helps you understand that, you know, this is where my bottleneck is. So we'll just give this another second to kick off. Now, when you get the Visual Studio preview, you'll be able to generate this load yourself. Right now, the load testing capability is going to be also marked in preview, so there will be some certain limitations that will apply. But I'll show you later how you can sign up for a free Team Foundation Service account, so you can start playing with this and generating your own load to try to DDoS Microsoft.com or whatever website you'd like to. Yeah. So the question was, how does the service in the cloud connect to your site locally? So I think you're talking about the application you're targeting. How does the cloud connect to that? That's an excellent question. For our load testing capability, we assume that whatever service you're trying to test has some public-facing internet address that you can direct your request back to. Now, there's a lot of tricks in here. Anu will go deeper into her session, but one of the things that you may want to be aware of and tell your IT administrators is that at a certain time, you should expect that we're going to get a lot of traffic coming in as part of a test. And you can actually open up the firewall to allow that traffic from the range of addresses that make up the Windows Azure data centers. And so there's some tricks there so that you don't accidentally trigger a denial of service prevention as part of that. But yes, excellent question. So here you can see what we're doing is we're actually stepping up that load. So every few seconds, we're actually increasing by 10 the number of users that we're simulating, and you get the idea. So this is just a quick look at some of that data. If this is something that's interesting to you, definitely come back for Anu's presentation. Now let me switch gears again. And earlier, I ran this test against my Fabricam website, and I actually found that at a certain point, my .NET application started to slow down. And I'm sure you've all probably been in similar situations where you have an application that might be running for just fine when you first launch it, but then after a while it starts to become sluggish. Usually the problem is some kind of memory leak somewhere. In the past, debugging these memory leaks would have been really difficult. But with Visual Studio 2013, we're actually going to be shipping a new managed memory analyzer that allows you to take just a regular process dump. And so I captured this process dump using the usual process dump tools built into Windows. And I can just say debug managed memory. It's going to take a look at all of the memory that's available on the heap at this time within the .NET portion of the memory base. And it's going to show me all of the objects that exist as part of that managed memory. It's going to relate that back to the source code that's available in my application. Just a second here. So here you can see that we have a lot of byte objects. We have, you know, various objects down here. But what I'd really like to do is actually compare this memory dump, which was taken after the application was running for, you know, maybe an hour or two, and you generated a lot of load against it. And I want to do a baseline comparison between that and an earlier application snapshot that I took. So when I compare that baseline against the earlier, it's going to basically just do a delta for me and show me the difference between the before and the after. And so now this gives me a really easy representation. Bytes and strings don't really tell me a lot because every application is going to have bytes and strings. But now I see that I have 264 customer objects in memory. That gives me a really good indication of where I might be able to drill in to understand if I'm leaking memory somewhere. It's too early in the morning to actually fix a managed memory leak, so don't worry, we're not going to drop into code for that. But hopefully you can imagine some scenarios where this might be useful for you when you're debugging applications, whether those are in a dev and test environment or maybe out in a production workload as well. So that's going to be available with Visual Studio 2013. So I showed you Team Room. I showed you some of the flexible source control options that we have. For those of you that use the traditional Team Foundation version control, I imagine most of us in this room, don't worry. We're continuing to invest there. The same team that delivers the Git capabilities will continue to deliver the Team Foundation version control capabilities that give you that centralized approach. And as much as possible, we're always going to try to maintain parity between the offerings in both of those cases. If you want to go much deeper into Git and the source control options available, my colleague Martin Woodward has another session later this week, and I'll send you the details at the end of the presentation. And then, of course, I showed you the load testing as a service. Now, I talked in the keynote a little bit about the acquisition that we're in the process of making of a technology called InRelease. InRelease is a great partner of ours, soon to be part of Microsoft. And what InRelease does is they provide you with a way to define how your code moves from one environment to another. And they also give you an approvals workflow as part of that. As we move into this continuous updates environment, it's really important that we be able to quickly go from a change that I make in some code over to a QA environment to be able to sign off on that and then push that over into an operations world. So they allow you to define those workflows in a predictable and repeatable fashion, but they also give you the ability to control when this code moves from stage to stage. Usually, if a development team goes to an operations team and says, hey, you know, we used to push to production once every 2 months. Now we want to push to production every week. You're probably going to get a lot of questions from the team about how you're going to make that happen and how you're going to give all of the people on the team good visibility and confidence into enabling that experience. And so a good release management solution like InRelease will help you deliver that confidence and deliver that predictability back into the team. So I'll just show you a little bit more of InRelease. So this is the main InRelease experience. It's a custom WPF application, and it actually consumes Team Foundation server data behind the scenes. And so here what you're looking at is my Fabricam call center application, and I've defined the way that this application needs to move from dev to QA to production. And of course, you might have other stages which make sense for your organization as well. Maybe you have a staging environment. And in each one of these stages, I get to define the configuration properties which are necessary for each one of the workflow activities that happens as you move from top to bottom. You'll notice over here on the left, we give you a broad set of activities that do everything from, you know, setting up IIS to setting up machines running in Windows Azure. And of course, you can create your own as well. And so these can become modules that you share across multiple workflows. But the idea is that everybody can come together from the dev and the operations and the QA team and really establish these workflows, easily understand what's happening when you move from one environment to the next. You can then also set up these approval workflows as well. So in this case, we're actually showing you that at each stage, we have various teams which get involved, and you can have emails that go out to those teams which tell you when a new build is ready for them to start running QA against. Once they decide to pick up that build, it can kick off the next step of the workflow, which might say we need to go provision some IaaS machines and push the bits over to that environment so that the testers can start to validate that environment. And so the approvals dashboard is just a simple web application. So here I'm logged in as myself, and I see all of the releases that are currently assigned to me. You'll notice that this one is currently in the QA stage. And so I can decide to approve this release. You know, load tests look good. We'll approve that. And again, of course, that kicks off the next stage of the workflow. And now my colleague on the operations team will see a similar workflow that says that this release is a candidate if they want to push it out to the operations team. So as you can see, it's already very well integrated with Team Foundation Server. We're very excited that that team is going to be joining Microsoft. We have a lot of ideas for how we can continue to make it even more integrated moving forward. But we're excited to have that be a part of what we'll be shipping later this year as part of TFS 2013. Now, finally, let's talk about operations. Of course, I imagine most of us in this room probably work on the construction side of this, where you're actually developing code or testing it. But our job's not done the moment we finish building the application and throw it over to the operations team. Really, our job is always going on, whether we're getting a call at 3 o'clock in the morning because something broke down, or whether there's just new feature requests that are coming in from the operations team. The challenge is that troubleshooting incidents over in production is oftentimes very difficult. I don't know about you, but most operations teams I've worked with won't let you just install Visual Studio on a production machine, attach the debugger, and try to understand what's going on. And so one of our missions over the last couple of years has really been to try to evolve the experience of troubleshooting these incidents in production and giving you the same types of tools that are available when you're troubleshooting those incidents in a dev and test environment. And so to that end, what I'm going to show you next is just one of the experiences that we've enabled by partnering with our friends over in the System Center team. And so this is System Center Operations Manager. I wouldn't expect most of you have worked with this before, but this is a tool that's used extensively by IT operations teams to actually monitor production systems. And so here you can see there's several events that are happening on my screen. And so an IT operations analyst will spend their day looking at these events and trying to understand the severity and the cause of each one of these events. Now, sometimes these events might be things that, you know, they just need to go fix a server, replace a hard drive, change a configuration property. But other times, they might need to actually escalate this issue back to the development team so that they can diagnose the issue and maybe turn around a new release of source code. And so here you can see a particular event that I've been troubleshooting between a dev and an ops environment. The first thing that I did with this event, and I did some of this earlier just in the interest of time, is I assigned it to our engineering team. And what that did is it took everything that System Center knows about that, that application crash, and it created a new incident work item over in Team Foundation Server. And so when I look at that particular operational issue, you'll notice that it's coming over with lots of information that System Center already knows about that application. And so, for example, if I click on the Attachments tab, the Links tab, it automatically came over with this IntelliTrace file that allows you to see exactly which exception was taking place on that application and be able to map that back to the specific line of code that threw that exception. And so what we're doing is we may be going back in time here to an earlier version of the source control that was shipped as part of that release that you're running in production. And IntelliTrace is automatically mapping those two capabilities together. Now, there's two different types of IntelliTrace events that are taking place here. It's a little nuanced, but I'll try my best to describe it. This particular event is something that's generated from System Center based on agents that are running all of the time over in System Center. So they're lightweight enough that you can run them in production. But for those of you that are used to using IntelliTrace, one of the great abilities of IntelliTrace is the ability for you to go back in time and see historical events as well. So I might have an application breakdown here, but what I really want to do is understand what happened 3 or 4 steps earlier, which led to this value being null. And so that usually requires that you go over to the production machine and manually kick off an IntelliTrace collection process, which is going to collect additional detailed information. And this is something that you don't run in production with all the time. But what we've done now is we've made it easier for you to collect that information. If I go back over to System Center, and if I take this event here, over on the right-hand side, we give the IT operations analyst all the tools they need to start collecting that IntelliTrace information in the background. And so what this does is it actually resets the IIS pool that's associated with this application. It starts collecting really detailed information. And then once you're done, you can package up that information and send it over to the development team. And it will automatically get attached to that same operations incident. And so I did this earlier as well, just in the interest of time. But if I take this detailed IntelliTrace file and now open up this one, you'll see I get a lot more exceptions that are taking place in this application. And if I double click one of those, you'll see a much more detailed experience around troubleshooting this. In fact, there's the same line of source code, but over on the right-hand side, we get the historical list of events that were taking place. And in fact, each one of these has their own call stack associated with it as well. So I can even see, for example, that this was the particular ADO.NET call that happened 10 steps earlier. And maybe that resulted in a null result set, which is why this particular variable is set to null. So that's just a quick overview around how SCOM and Team Foundation Server can work together to help you troubleshoot these types of issues. My colleague Larry Guger is going to be going deeper with another session if that's something that's interesting. There's another type of IntelliTrace event that we're starting to enable as well. I'm just getting this demo environment ready here. And so I just showed you how you can troubleshoot an IntelliTrace file which represents exceptions. But we're also adding a new type of IntelliTrace file that can help you understand performance issues that are taking place in your application. So here is an IntelliTrace file that I collected earlier. And you can see that it consists of some web requests. And down here, we actually show you the hot path of what the slowest nodes of your application were when this particular web request took place. And so I can easily drill into this, and maybe I want to take a look at this particular call and drill into that, and it takes me, again, straight back to that line of source code. So I can easily diagnose this a little bit further and understand what might be going on. So, just to wrap up, these are some of the improvements that that I showed you. We have a lot more sessions later on this week that you can go take a look at as well. Let me just get through those sessions, and then I'll take some Q&A. For those of you that aren't yet using Team Foundation Server, the easiest way to get started is to go to tfs.visualstudio.com, and you can sign up for an account that uses all of the capabilities that I showed you here today. In fact, all of these capabilities you see on the screen are already available with Team Foundation Service. And of course, starting tomorrow, you'll be able to download the on-premises version of Team Foundation Server 2013. That will have a go-live license associated with it, so we encourage you, if you're comfortable, to use that in production, and we'll help support you as you move from the preview release to the final RTM release later this year. Some of my recommendations on sessions, if you are interested in learning more about how Microsoft uses these tools to practice Agile, Greg and Martin are a great set of presenters. They're two Agilistas on our team, and so they're always coming up with new ways that we can ship software better, faster, higher quality, and they'll be doing a great presentation later this afternoon. David Starr is the gentleman who owns the Code Lens capability, and so he'll show you more about that heads-up display, as well as a lot of additional tools you can use within Visual Studio for understanding your code and writing higher quality code as well. Starting tomorrow, Greg Bohr is going to be doing a deeper dive into those Team Foundation Server Agile planning tools, including how you actually customize those tools to fit the specific needs that your team might have. And then Martin has another session where he'll be showing you how to practice Git and TF version control and show you lots of additional version control bells and whistles within TFS 2013. Finally, on Thursday, I have another session where I'll be going deeper into the testing capabilities for manual testers that might be working on your team, as well as the lab management capabilities that allow you to set up a build, deploy, test workflow automatically, and you can set up your own dev and test labs straight from within TFS. My colleague Anu is doing the session on cloud-powered load testing, so she'll be going much deeper into the way that load testing can be done with our new service there. And I think that's it. So thank you all for spending the time. If you want to go for lunch, I won't be offended if you want to leave now. And please fill out an eval, and I'll stick around for a few minutes to ask to answer questions as well. Thank you. Please. Thank you. Any questions? It's kind of hard to see, so if I don't see you, just yell at me, throw something. Yes. Good question. When will you see some more about in release? Bear with us a little bit. We're still finalizing the acquisition. Microsoft has a lot of processes to go through when you acquire a smaller company like that. But as soon as we have the acquisition complete, then we'll be announcing more details about how you can get in release and that sort of thing. In the meantime, you can still go to in release directly and request a demo and purchase the product if you'd like. Yeah. Is it possible to create MSI packages within release? Yeah. Anything that you can do from the command line, of course, you can automate through in release. So if there's a tool that you use to create MSIs today, whether that's with Install Shield or with some of the Wix tools that you might use to create MSIs, you can automate that same process with in release. Yes. Yeah. Is this material available somewhere? Yes, it is. My session will be recorded, the PowerPoint available within 24 hours. I also did the same session at TechEd North America 3 weeks ago, so you can watch Brian Harry and I doing that. Go to Channel 9 and download that as well. PowerPoint, everything's available for download. Yep, great. Does IntelliTrace support Windows services? So are they .NET services that you're using? You know, the best person to ask is Larry Guger. He'll be doing another presentation later this week. I don't know what the plan is for Windows services. It's a good question. I just don't know what his latest is. But he's the PM who runs that that team. So, great. Yeah. Any chance to get SVN in the future? I'll never say never, but at the time, we don't have any plans to support SVN directly within TFS. There is a tool called SVN Bridge, which allows you to basically have a set of SVN clients and have them talk to TFS as if it was an SVN server. So that's something you can look into. It doesn't support 100% of the SVN operations, but most of the people that I talk to say it works well enough for them. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, how does Visual Studio support multiple Git repos? We do support multiple Git repos. If you go to Martin's session later this week, he'll show you exactly how that works. But yes, you will be able to set up multiple repos now with TFS 2013. Yep, great.
Following on from the SVN question, are there plans to support any other version
control? Are there plans to support any other version control systems? Mercurial is a common one I'm asked. So at the moment, no. You know, we did an in-depth study and we looked at kind of the most popular ones, and Git was far and away the most popular in terms of a distributed version control system, and we see that momentum continuing. Of course, you know, our team's very responsive to customer feedback and we'll continue to evaluate that, but right now I would say don't hold your breath for additional source control options. Yeah, good question. It's a good question. I actually don't know the answer to that. Usually at this stage of the product cycle, we haven't finalized the which features go into which SKU. So he was asking the memory analyzer that I showed, which SKU is that available? I'm using Visual Studio Ultimate, so I couldn't tell you if that falls off on lower versions. It's a good question. If you email me, BrianKEL@Microsoft.com, I'll try to get an answer for you on that one. So like a WPF application, is that what you're asking? So in release allows you to automate, you know, any workflow that you can script, basically. And so if you have a WPF application, one way you might be deploying that is with Click Once. And so if you wanted to make that application available on a server that some of your beta users start to try out, then you can easily automate that and plug that into the process that I showed you. There's no secret sauce in in-release for the specific type of application that you're using. Of course, we ship a toolbox of controls for some common operations like web deploy and setting up an Azure IaaS image and those sorts of things. But you can define, you know, anything you can define in a regular command line process, you can define in here. Yeah.
Should we just start shutting down your VMs?
Oh, that would be great. Yeah. Or actually just shut down the entire system would be fine. Yeah, thank you. Who's next? Yeah. Sorry, what was the question? Sure, yes. At the Build conference, we will be sharing a lot more details about how Visual Studio 2013 can be used to build and diagnose web-based applications, whether you're using JavaScript or just HTML and CSS. I know there are several sessions happening this week, and all of those sessions will be recorded and made available on Channel 9. My friend Jonathan Carter is giving one of those sessions, so you can search for that name. But yes, there's a lot more information coming at Build later this week that talks specifically about how Visual Studio lights up platform building and debugging scenarios. The RTM for 2013 will be sometime later this year. That's all I can say without losing my job. But the preview that comes out tomorrow, you can use that in production. Really high quality release. I've been running it for a while. Anthony's been running it. It's a good solid release. So. So ClearCase, there is a migration tool that allows you to go from ClearCase into Team Foundation Server. I don't believe that's a bidirectional tool, so it's really designed for people that want to move from ClearCase to Team Foundation Server. There is a tool that's open called the Team Foundation Integration Platform, and the idea with that is you can write custom interfaces based on the tool that you might want to either move from or synchronize with. And so I would encourage you to look at that tool to see if there's a ClearCase provider built already. If not, you might have to write a custom interface to map back to your ClearCase environment. But that's a good one for us to, we can talk in detail at the booth later this week. Martin Woodward's another good guy to find if you want to talk in depth about your specific needs there. Yeah. Who else? Yeah. For the events that show up for the development team. So the default workflow is that before an event shows up for the Team Foundation Server team, the person using System Center Operations Manager needs to actually look at that event and decide that they're going to assign it to engineering. That triggers the creation of a new event over in TFS, and it packages up everything that System Center knows. So you don't need to be worried about every event showing up in SCOM. SCOM tends to be kind of like the event log in Windows. It can be very noisy and shows you maybe a lot more information than you always care about. But the idea is that a professional who understands those servers and the workloads will look at an incident and understand when it needs to be assigned to the engineering team. Is there a way to automatically trigger certain types of events? Probably. I'm not a System Center Operations Manager expert, but I would imagine that's possible. If you find me in the booth or one of my colleagues, like Larry Guger, we can answer that question for sure and find the right expertise. It's a good question. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good question. How is NRelease and lab management going to kind of coexist moving forward? We're still sorting it out. The acquisition is still going through. I do think that there's a lot of opportunity for us to kind of overlap some of those experiences. And for example, NRelease has their own agent that handles the deployment today. Lab Management has their own agent. So we're looking at how we combine some of that tech. But until the acquisition's complete and we can actually peek at their source code, it's a little too early to say exactly what we'll be able to do. So bear with us, and we'll be certainly informing you in the future of how that's going to work. I apologize. I do have to get over to my other session. So I hope this was useful for you, and I hope to see some of you later this week. Thank you very much.